Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Virginia's new governor, John Harvey, was using his power to make very bad choices. He controlled the laws, the government, and the courts, and he was abusing that power. He abused this power so much that the colonists, including the governor's own council, had entered into a policy of obstruction against the governor. So the colonists were in full-blown resistance to the new governor. Not quite rebellion, but basically stopping him from doing things they thought he shouldn't be doing. This wasn't the way Governor Harvey imagined his reign. He thought he would have assistance from the people, at least from the council that was chosen to help him. But even though they got in his way and refused to follow his orders when they didn't believe he was allowed to do certain things, he tried to reason with the colonists. He had been chosen by the king to be their governor. And with that, he had been given the power to write laws, to rule over the courts, and to create punishments. To resist him was to resist the king. The colonists felt differently. They felt that Governor Harvey was the one who was resisting the king. The king had promised them that he would take care of the colonists. He would create fair laws, a good life, and ensure that they could pursue happiness within reasonable limits. The governor wasn't allowing the promise the king had made to be fulfilled. Who did this governor think he was? So, Governor Harvey was in a bit of a situation when he had to beg the king for more power. He wanted to make sure that everyone knew that the governor was the law and that they couldn't resist him, even if they believed he was wrong. He wrote home complaining of his misery. "My position in Virginia is most miserable," he said. But Governor Harvey wasn't the only one who wrote home. Colonists poured letters into England telling the tales of the horrible things their governor was doing to them. By the end of the year, the council in England wanted both sides to end their disagreements and start working together. The colonists said, "Okay, fine, we'll make peace." They wrote a document promising to swallow up and bury all of the issues between them. Even the governor's council promised to obey the governor and follow his orders. But this peace wouldn't last long. The peace was not only made out of fear of angering the council in England, rather than out of a real sense of wanting to make peace, it was also not fated to be so. For a much larger problem was heading their way. One that was timeless and deep and fiery without compromise. That was the problem of religion. For hundreds of years, Europeans, Englishmen included, had slaughtered each other in the thousands over which version of Christianity was the correct version. And at this particular time, the red-hot disagreement was between Catholics and Protestants. England was overwhelmingly Protestant. And this was in the throes of fierce oppression against the Catholics. That oppression extended to the colonies. This is where we find the beginning of Maryland. Maryland is the only colony that was formed by Catholics for Catholics. It's also right on the border of Virginia, which, like all other English colonies, was filled mostly with Protestants. One guy, a Catholic named Lord Baltimore, had been given permission by the king to establish a colony in present-day Maryland. Back then, present-day Maryland was part of Virginia. Just 5 years after Virginia became a royal colony, Lord Baltimore and his ship full of Catholic settlers arrived in Virginia. The Virginia colonists were exactly as friendly to them as you'd imagine. You could cut the hostility in the air with a knife. Virginians wanted these Catholics out of Virginia as fast as possible. Lord Baltimore was like, "Yeah, this land is really good. I'll take this chunk of Virginia here." He headed back to England to ask the king for permission to settle there with the other Catholics. The Virginians didn't like this one bit. They sent their own man to England as well. The man they sent would argue against giving the land to Lord Baltimore. Lord Baltimore won, and off he went back to Virginia to claim his prize and chop off a piece of land for himself. Just another reminder that this isn't a podcast about Virginia history or Maryland history. We're discussing all of this because it sets the stage for why Virginia colonists went from resisting their governor to outright rebellion against their governor. The Maryland issue was the flame that set off the explosion. Lord Baltimore's grandson became governor of Maryland just a few years later. It was now 1634. At this time, the governor of Maryland sent a bunch of ships from Maryland to Virginia. There were 300 Catholics aboard those ships. The king had promised these Catholics that the colonists and the governor of Virginia would help them with supplies and other things they needed. The colonists were obligated to give Maryland their assistance because the king had told them so. But Governor Harvey wrote that many of the Virginia colonists were so against helping Maryland that they would, quote, rather knock their cattle on the heads than sell them to Maryland. This meant that even though the colonists were ordered to help, they kind of really didn't want to, and they started to refuse to help the Catholics. They would literally rather destroy their own property than give any of their property to these Catholics in Maryland. It was one thing for the colonists to disobey the king. It was another thing for Governor Harvey to do so. He had been plucked from England by the king himself to carry out his orders in Virginia, and he wasn't about to disobey. So, Governor Harvey sent supplies to Maryland and even sent some of his own cattle. The Virginians were outraged at this. How could he take from us and give to them, the Catholics, the people who took some of our land for themselves and are interfering with our trade with the natives? Ironic, considering the Virginians had done all of that to the natives who lived in Virginia. But they were angry. Their governor wasn't just some other nation. He was an Englishman. They were all Englishmen. And shouldn't he hate the Catholics? But Governor Harvey didn't have much of a choice. He had to help the Catholics in Maryland. The king had ordered him to do so. But the stage was set. The lines were drawn. And he was not on the side of Virginia. Fighting eventually broke out among some of the Marylanders and the Virginians. It's a little too detailed and not really relevant to what we're discussing here, so just know that there were attacks and counterattacks. It was like a mini-war between the two English colonies. Virginia was abuzz with the excitement of destroying Maryland once and for all. Finally, they could drive out the Catholics and have what was rightfully theirs back. Let's do this. However, in the midst of this mini-war, Governor Harvey was still helping Maryland. The outrage, the scandal. Are you serious? If Virginia colonists hated Governor Harvey before, they were hoisting his body and lighting it on fire in their minds now. He tried to tell the colonists his reasons for doing this, but it was no use. He was a traitor. But this was not the final straw towards Harvey's end. A few more things had to happen before Virginia could close the book on him. The Virginia Governor's Council held meetings to dream up ways they could overthrow Maryland. They even went so far as to plot with Lord Baltimore's enemies in England. Then came a small act that seemed like it was tiny enough at first, but it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Later that year, we're still in 1634, an English man named Captain Thomas Young came to Virginia on a mission from the king. In order to carry out his mission, he needed someone to build a few ships for him in Virginia. So, Governor Harvey found a servant living in a Virginia household who knew how to build ships. He took this servant without the master's permission and gave him to Captain Young to build the ships. This was in direct violation of a law in the colony that said the governor couldn't make any colonist do any work for him unless the colonist agreed to it. Angered by this blatant disregard for the law, the governor's council demanded that Harvey answer for his actions. Governor Harvey replied that Captain Young was on a mission for the king, and that the king had given Captain Young permission to use any person he wanted to in the colony, so he wasn't breaking the law. The council told him that this was a terrible way to do things and that it would breed ill blood in Virginia. But the ill blood was already there. And it wasn't just from the colonists. His own council hated him. He was denying the council their rights, using them like a tool for his pleasure and punishing them if they didn't do as he commanded. The council members complained about Governor Harvey taking people's houses and striking fear into the minds of all men in the colony. The ill blood wasn't just on the governor's council side. The feeling was mutual. Things got so heated between the governor and the governor's council that at one point, Governor Harvey struck one of the council members and knocked his teeth out. Even through all of this, Governor Harvey wrote to the council in England that he was being crazy patient with the council in Virginia. He was being a gentleman and was courteous in all disagreements. When the next year, in the spring of 1635, he was forced out of his office, the complaints against him were so numerous that it became necessary to gather the assembly and talk about all of the complaints. Maybe the council in England believed Governor Harvey. Maybe they didn't. That would all be determined in a dramatic showdown in London a bit later. For now, Governor Harvey wasn't done. Remember when years ago, King Charles asked the colonists for all of their tobacco? He wanted to own all of it and get all of the money made from selling all of it. The colonists would be like employees of his, and the colonists had said, no thanks. Well, Governor Harvey did something about this that really, really angered the colonists. Like, come on, give it a rest. Governor Harvey was afraid that King Charles wouldn't like hearing no, he couldn't have all of their tobacco. So he intercepted the document from the assembly to the king telling him no. This act by the governor created widespread anger throughout the colony. The governor didn't have the power to stop communication from Virginia's government to England. The time of the end had come. The end of Harvey in Virginia. Almost. Hold on to your butts. This one's a doozy. By the end of that year, the governor's council was holding secret meetings to discuss the troublesome governor. One of the council members galloped from farm to farm denouncing the governor and inciting resistance. He held meetings where people gathered around him and signed documents stating their grievances. In the middle of that year, some of the governor's friends invited themselves to one of these meetings. The servant at the door denied them entry, but they could hear the angry conversation against the governor and the injustices they had suffered under him from where they stood. When Governor Harvey heard about these meetings, he was enraged. He issued warrants for the arrest of the council members involved, especially that troublesome man who was going around to all the farms holding these meetings. The man was brought before the governor in chains and agreed to surrender the signed documents of complaint. He asked, however, for his trial to be done in England because he was certain he would receive no justice from Governor Harvey. When the other prisoners were brought before the governor to answer for their treason, they asked what the charges against them were. Governor Harvey told them that they'll be informed of their charges when they reached the noose. Luckily, the governor's council insisted on fair trials for all of those accused. Harvey then declared that the colony was under martial law, meaning that everyone, including the council, had to answer to him. To this, the council refused. This enraged Harvey. He paced back and forth in the meeting room until finally he sat down in his chair. A shadow came over him, and he ordered everyone to answer a question without thought or hesitation. One by one, he asked them, "What do these men who have persuaded people from their obedience to the king deserve as a punishment?" The council members didn't react well to this. They told Harvey that he was being ridiculous and that they wouldn't answer sudden, unthought-out sentences to be carried out against these people. A heated argument followed. The meeting eventually ended, and another meeting between the council members and the governor was held. At this meeting, Governor Harvey asked the council why they thought the colonists had complained about him, and he demanded to know whether any of the council members had known that these meetings among the colonists had been happening. Oddly enough, out of everything Harvey had done to the colonists and to the council told him that the main complaint against him was that he had stopped the colony's letter to the king, telling him that they wouldn't let him have all of their tobacco. The governor shot up from his seat and ordered the arrest of the council member who told him this. To this, the other council members immediately rushed Harvey and pinned him down in place, declaring that it was he who was under arrest for treason. At that moment, 40 men who had been waiting outside the room sprang from their hiding places and surrounded the house, muskets drawn. The council members surrounded the governor. The leader of the council told Governor Harvey that if he would only listen to the complaints against him, they would let him go. They made him sit in his chair and listen, fuming to all of the grievances from the colonists. When they were done, the council told Harvey that there was nothing that could be done to ease the anger of the colonists, except if Harvey went to England and answered for all of these things to the English council. Even now, Harvey refused. He said that he had been chosen by the king, and he wouldn't leave unless the king himself commanded it. In the following days, Harvey's friends abandoned him. He soon changed his mind because not a single soldier would follow his orders. He was powerless. On top of this, armed guards had been placed around his house so that nobody, including Harvey, could come in or go out. he could make no effort at escape or gathering support. All of the prisoners that had been arrested over the meetings among the colonists were freed. A few days after this, the governor finally agreed to get on the first ship to England, where he would answer to the English council for everything he had done. Naturally, he would deny it all, so the colonists sent a member of the assembly on the same ship as Harvey to make it clear that the charges against him were serious, and that they had reason to accuse him of these things. While Harvey headed to England, the assembly gathered to discuss the issue of who should replace him. They chose one of the former governors, good old Francis Wyatt. After Harvey arrived in England, a bunch of drama went down between him and the man sent from the assembly, and it's all extremely interesting, but not really relevant to the background of the American Revolution. So just know that Harvey did deny everything. King Charles was furious that the assembly had dismissed their governor. He ordered Harvey to return to Virginia, even if just for one day, to make sure that all the colonists knew that they had stepped over the line of what they were allowed to do. It was only the king who could send or dismiss governors there. Keep in mind the issue that Charles's father had with Parliament stepping into the king's power. Parliament did the same thing with Charles. And, as mentioned earlier, Charles didn't know it yet, but the issues he had with Parliament would explode into a civil war in England, and would result in Parliament publicly executing Charles. Okay, so there were a lot of problems with people stepping on the king's power in England. And he wasn't about to let the colonists start doing it too. The king and the council in England restored Governor Harvey to his position in Virginia. The men who had participated in the mutiny and had kicked Harvey out of office were ordered to come to England to answer for the charge of treason. The man sent from the assembly to argue against Governor Harvey told the council in England that Harvey had conducted himself so terribly in Virginia that if he ever returned, he would be shot. After much delay and a near shipwreck at sea, Governor Harvey did return to the shores of Virginia several months later. He landed in Elizabeth City, 360 miles away from Jamestown. He set up a temporary capital there, and from where he began his reign of revenge. He pardoned everyone who had been involved in the mutiny, except for a handful of men who had been in the room with him when he was forced to sit and listen to the complaints against him. He had brought several men with him from England who would replace people on the council. Here was this guy who just months before had been surrounded by armed guards, not a friend in sight. Now he had been restored to the highest authority in the colony and once again had the entire council under his control. The courts were back under his control as well, and he inflicted cruelty and illegal judgments against anyone he deemed deserved it. He ordered whipping, cutting off of ears, and the confiscation of people's private money so he could use it for himself. He even ordered banishment of those who had insulted him or his friends with mere words. The mutinous men who had overthrown him were sent to England as ordered, and while they were gone, their houses, cattle, servants, and everything they owned was seized and put under the ownership of Governor Harvey. The council member who had been in charge of the mutiny had been extremely wealthy. Governor Harvey swore to leave him worth nothing. Fortunately for that man, he got wind of what was happening to his property in Virginia and got the council in England to make Governor Harvey give it all back. Harvey, of course, didn't listen. He continued to plunder his enemies' houses and pretended that he had received a new order from the English council allowing him to do so. This guy had become mad with rage and greed. Back in England, the mutinous council members were making progress with their case. The king seemed to have forgotten all about it and busied himself with other things. The council members were easily able to find important people in England who would side with them. Reports against Governor Harvey came from everywhere in the colonies. The accusations poured into England. The taverns and streets were flooded with talk against him. Harvey complained that the king should know how much I, quote, groan under the oppressions of my prevailing enemies who proceed against me as to tear me from my house in an unusual way of inviting my creditors to clamor. Ironic, considering that this is exactly what he had done to other people. In fact, he had been even more unfair in tearing houses away from people without so much as a trial or complaints. Within a few months, the English council had agreed to drop the charges against the mutinous council members. They also agreed that Governor Harvey was a terrible person and had done terrible things. They ordered that he was to be removed as governor. They also approved Francis Wyatt being governor again. This was the man the assembly had chosen when they kicked Harvey out. He had been governor of Virginia long before this, and the people loved him. He was a good choice and a relief for the people there. Finally, nearly 2 years later, Governor Harvey received an order telling him to give all of the houses and belongings back to the people he had taken from them. This time, he could no longer pretend he had orders to continue what he was doing, so he had to agree. He gave everything back to those he had robbed. When the new governor was in charge, he wasted no time in bringing charges against Harvey, who was brought before the courts and made to answer for what he had done. Governor Harvey was once again placed under armed guard. He complained about being watched and said that he wished to return to England where he could live in peace. He was eventually allowed to return to England, and once he got there, he lived in anything but peace. The governor's rage and vile temper hadn't been tamed. He caused such a commotion about what he believed was injustice done against him that he got the governor who replaced him removed from office. The poor colonists had just 2 years of this new governor's governorship, 2 years in which they enjoyed a fair, compassionate leader. The colonists had wanted him to continue being their governor, but they still needed the permission of England to make it so. They were completely unable to control who ruled them and who would use them for personal feuds. And now they had to wait for another governor to be chosen by the king. That man was Sir William Berkeley. Governor Berkeley's reign as governor would end in a similar way as Governor Harvey's reign. But his story is more of a beloved colonial hero who sank to becoming a dark Sith lord that is to this day remembered as one of the worst governors America has ever had. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss Governor Berkeley's early years in the colony and the hard position Virginia took when it came to the Civil War in England. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happen.